everybody, for downloading the latest Bang the Table podcast, made possible thanks to SI.com and Fan Nation. I am the Doc, John Macaroon. After OTAs, minicamp, the final Lions practice that was available to the media, finally have an opportunity to sit down and check in with the Detroit Lions. Looking forward to this week's broadcast so that we can check in with some of the positives, some concerns. This week, I brought in my guy, Matt Broder, covers the Lions beat writer for Woodward Sports. Have had an opportunity now to talk to him since he's joined the beat, and it's going to be a great opportunity to kind of get his perspective regarding the Detroit Lions. Matt, what's been happening?
Awesome. Thank you so much, John. I appreciate you having me on. It's always great watching your shows, reading your articles. I'm pumped to be talking to you here.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a great time. I always enjoy kind of picking the brain of those also covering the Lions. So I do want to start here because we're going to get to the things that have riled up people, the concerns, all those things this week. But coming from minicamp practices, what you've observed at the time you've been out there, what gives you hope about this 2023 Detroit Lions team?
You know, what gives me the most hope is that secondary, that new shiny secondary. You know, it's gotten a lot of the headlines because that's where we probably invested the most money in free agency. But so I was really excited to see what they looked like out there on the field, even without hitting, without wearing pads. You know, they call it a pajama party here the last month we've witnessed. But seeing them out there, seeing the kind of leadership that some of these new guys are bringing to the team, that definitely gives me hope for the Lions next season. That's the area that they needed to address the most, and they did. So I'm pumped to see them out there once the season gets going.
Yeah, it was great to see when you have the signings like Cam Sutton, C.J. Gardner-Johnson, and you bring in a Brian Branch, you realize, okay, now with the pieces that were already there, with the likes of a Kirby Joseph, Tracy Walker returning, hopefully healthy from a serious injury, you realize, okay, this secondary is going to be better than what it was. But what I found to be refreshing was the swagger. Kind of like,
yes,
the overall attitude, like, look, we know we stunk last year. We know that this offense is talked about. So we can't go out and make a name against any opponent right now. So let's go and make a name against this offense that people are talking about. And I think that's a challenge that's been coming directly from Aaron Glenn. And I think the players on the roster, I've never heard that much chirping in a pajama party practice before, where every single time the secondary got their hands on the ball, they're sitting there standing over the players, making noise.
Right.
It was great to see. And I think that starts, you know, when people say, well, not much goes on at OTAs, there's nothing to pay attention to. I wholeheartedly disagree, because I think that the beginning of an attitude and a swagger and a belief system starts anytime you take the field. And I think for what we saw in regards to the defense, it looked really good in regards to their competitiveness and willingness to stand up to an offense that people are touting very highly.
No, you're spot on. And we even heard yesterday, hearing some of the coaches talk, and we've heard Jared Goff say it too, how difficult it's been, you know, navigating their offense with such an improved defense. It comes right from the horse's mouth there. And let's not forget about Emmanuel Mosley either. He's banged up and still rehabbing his torn ACL, but that's even another addition to that secondary that will be valuable at some point this season.
Yeah, and you saw him participating in walkthroughs, Tracy Walker. And it's the great belief, too, is that when you have a swagger, when you have a guy like C.J. Gardner-Johnson, a veteran who's just come off of playing in the Super Bowl, and he's like, there's nobody out here like me, nobody out here going to bring the fire in an OTA practice, and he turns and looks at the reporters and is like, he's like, there's nobody like me, and you better start taking notes because it's serious business. And you can't help but think that that's going to rub off on a Kirby Joseph, on a Brian Branch, even on a Tracy Walker.
Yes.
I do think it's going to translate, because it is so tough when you look at where the line struggled in recent years. It was the defense. It was the defensive line not getting enough pressure, not making enough plays. The secondary, for those that, you know, had complaints about Jeff Okuda and Will Harris and the likes, it was just a secondary that, unfortunately, with Amani Arawarie, that many thought would take a next step, but they didn't. And so I like the fact that the front office targeted a weakness and said, okay, obviously, clearly, watching film, there needed to be an upgrade in the secondary, and that's where they made the move. They didn't really address the defensive line too much, But I think when you see the returning talent on the defensive line, there's a lot to be desired when you're looking at Aiden Hutchinson, you're looking at James Houston, Josh Pascal, lots of young talent, along with the interior of Aleem McNeil, John Kaminsky, and Isaiah Bugs. Adding Broderick Martin slowly, I think, will help to kind of ease the tension that people have. Because, you know, the biggest question mark, and I asked Aaron Glenn, I said, hey, you know, obviously, clearly, the biggest question mark that your defense is going to have is going to be the interior of the defensive line.
Yes.
And there's going to be some question marks. But I do think that with a training camp and some early experience with some of those that are returning, I think they'll do enough to at least upgrade. I mean, Matt, last year the defense was ranked in the bottom third in a lot of categories. Even with the success they had in the second half of the year,
right,
it still didn't measure up to be good enough. But I think this year, with everybody evolving and the mix of players that they got, this defense, I think, can be a top 15 defense. Do you agree?
I do agree. And you called it out. They didn't invest much in the defensive line, in that defensive front. But I think the investment in the secondary is an investment in that defensive line. I just think they want to – I think they're relying on the development of those young players, both by the new young coaches that they brought in to coach the defensive line, and John Scott Jr. and Cam Davis, but also the veteran presences, like you said, the Isaiah Bugs, the Kaminskys, the Benita Jones isn't a veteran. I'm thinking Charles Harris. The development, they see the guys that they've drafted, like Aleem McNeil and Aiden Hutchinson. They see those guys as the developmental next step, being the biggest step they take in their career, and to make that easier on them, instead of adding more people to that group, they solidified the secondary and addressed the linebacker core to help with that. So I'm right with you there. I think that defensive line is the least talked about or the least invested in, but I think is the most important, probably the most important group on that defense.
Yeah, and it was nice to hear the likes of Broderick Martin had a quick chance to talk to him for a few minutes after he talked to a linebacker.
What a great guy.
Yeah,
what a great kid.
Very nice individual. And it was I'm very first thankful that he had a moment to talk to me, because he did spend a good few minutes with the Lions reporter, and I caught up with him afterward, and he was talking about the fact that Aaron Glenn is putting up on the board stop the run as being an emphasis, because clearly it was something that the defense just struggled with early in the year, especially against running quarterbacks. You saw games in which running backs were able to kind of get chunk yards, especially it was highlighted really thoroughly by the Panthers game, but there were some reasons for that as well. Notwithstanding the talent, obviously the field conditions made the defense a little bit hesitant, but you look at it and you look at collectively, the defense didn't do a good enough job stopping the run. And I think it's being emphasized, and that's really important, is that, yes, sack numbers are going to be expected. Pressuring the quarterback is a given. You have several young, talented individuals that will potentially get to the quarterback, but stopping that run is so key, because it allows you to win the battle in the trenches. It allows you to turn the ball back over to your offense, which is the strength of the team. I think they can do it as long as it's the will and the attitude. And I think bringing back a lot of guys that, especially in the linebacking core with Alex Anzalone and the development of Derek Barnes, and you add a linebacker that everybody expects to be able to rush downhill and smack some people around, I think that the talk about the linebackers hasn't been really all that much, because the confidence isn't there. But I do think that the ability to stop the run can be aided by this linebacking core, which has been upgraded.
Yes. And you, in terms of stopping line too, John Scott Jr. in his interview yesterday with the media, he talked about his philosophy, saying you need to earn the ability to rush the quarterback. You got to do that by being able to stop the run. So they're definitely focusing on that every single day in that room. But you're right, that linebacker crew, it's one of the most intriguing groups to me going into this season, because I probably thought that Jack Campbell, you know, was going to be that day one starter. And I do believe he's going to contribute early and often for the Lions this year. But seeing the emergence of Derek Barnes, and then also seeing the confidence that not only the coaches, but the players around the team have in Alex Anzalone, it opened my eyes to a lot more of what that group can be.
Yeah, and I think that when you realize that Anceloni now feels a sense of security. He secured the bag, a longer-term contract. Now he can securely really take his role as the leader of that defense. And you'll see, I think, improvements with Derek Barnes and Jack Campbell developing quickly and Malcolm Rodriguez, whatever his role will end up shaking out to be this year. I think the linebacking core is going to be better and perform at a higher level. And let's not discount Jalen Reeves-Maybin, who'll get a spell here and there.
Germ,
absolutely. We'll get an opportunity with veteran leadership. Now, we turn our attention a little bit to the offense, which I think gave people a little bit of pause. It picked up a little bit later on in minicamp and OTAs, but I think that, you know, obviously we're going to touch on Jameson Williams, but let's start with Jahmyr Gibbs. I think that everybody, when number 26 is out on the field, we all stop to look and target number 26. And luckily on the last day, I caught a video of a great drill alongside Muhammad Ibrahim, where you can really showcase the footwork and the burst speed that Jahmyr Gibbs had. There was a great rep that you and I both saw earlier at minicamp, where he caught the ball and turned on the Jets. We got a glimpse of the Jets being fired, and everybody that commented said, oh yeah, no defender was going to catch him had he been in the open field. And we got a little glimpse of what Jahmyr Gibbs can be as an offensive weapon.
We did. And you got to love to see it. It's funny. You haven't heard too many people over the last two months talk about, you know, that number 12 pick and spending it on a running back. It's like now that we've been able to see Jahmyr Gibbs, even in pajamas, he's special, man. He's special, John. He's one, you called it out. It's the quick feet. It's that explosion when he puts his foot into the ground and can explode from that moment on to the end zone or to wherever he's going. Man, he's going to be special. It's that shifty type of speed. Both he and Jameson are home run hitters, but they do it in a different way.
Yeah, and it's going to be, I think, when people look at concerns regarding the offense, it's going to be, can Jared Goff connect deep for some explosive plays? And Ben Johnson spoke to the media last year and said that he likes big plays. He loves one-play drives. And unfortunately, Jameson Williams, with the suspension, kind of takes out a big portion of your deep passing game, obviously with Chark leaving to go to the Panthers. I think that we will have to take a look at the deep passing game. But Marvin Jones will get some intermediate work. Don't discount Amon-Ra St. Brown getting some deep touches. And I think what we've seen that has been also positive alongside Jahmyr Gibbs is Sam Laporta can be a target that can get the intermediate yards in between 10 and 20 yards with the ability to get yards after the catch. So while I don't think Goff is going to be launching it 30 yards in the air, I think there's going to be opportunities for chunk plays where Ben Johnson can scheme Sam Laporta and Jahmyr Gibbs open for opportunities underneath or intermediate in the flats so that they can kind of use their athleticism to get the extra 5-6 yards to make the plays upwards of 15 to 20 yards. I think you pay attention early. It may not be deep plays, but I think there's opportunity for chunk yards with this offense.
You're so right. And this is where it all falls on Ben Johnson and his creativity that he's earned the praise that he's gotten, but this is where it's the next step in his career. We think he's going to be a head coach in the very near future. This is the year where he proves, all right, you're not going to surprise anybody with this offense anymore. How are you going to get creative to get these different guys the balls, especially with Jameson Williams being out for the first 6 games? And I think that's why they, regardless of JMO being suspended, I think targeting guys like Jahmyr Gibbs and Sam Laporta and even Antoine Green in the draft fill different roles within that offense. Jahmyr Gibbs and Laporta are more versatile players. There are more things you can do behind the line of scrimmage, but Antoine Green could be one of those guys that at least fills a deep threat role, depending on how much time he gets in the game. He's a threat there. And Marvin Jones, I love the unpredictability that we have going into the season, not knowing who's going to be that star player from game to game on the offense.
Yeah, and you realize we still haven't even talked about the most reliable player, I think, in the NFL, and Amon-Ra St. Brown, who just shows up to work, catches footballs, runs for yards after the catch, and handles his business and puts in the prep work. And I think part of the reason, for me at least, why you can be a little bit critical of Jameson Williams is we see Amon-Ra St. Brown, who never puts the ball on the ground. It's like the ball goes to him, boom, it's usually going to be a reception. He finds his way open, and he finds opportunities to handle his business. And Dan Campbell had said he'd be shocked to see Amon-Ra have a bad practice. So let's turn our attention to, obviously, the player that really has been under the microscope. And for just to set the table, here's the reason why. Jameson Williams was a player that the Lions traded up for last year in 2022. And when you had the opportunity to see Jameson Williams in his first year, you realize, okay, there's a situation where you got this young cat that has been a great player at Alabama. The team decides to make an investment and move up to select him at number 12. Okay, fine, you trade within the division. You cut him a check for a significant amount, and you realize, okay, 2022 is going to be a redshirt year potentially. But you realize, okay, what did you do in that year in 2022 when you were drafted? What did you do to set yourself apart? How did you prepare? How did you get yourself right? Because he still was part of the team for a better chunk of half a season. And now you realize he did some work with Goff in the offseason. So I think the expectation was, okay, he'd be a little bit further along. And what we saw was, look, he still made plays. We have to acknowledge that Jameson also has the jets, and he can turn it on and burn past the defense. But what we saw was a player that was inconsistent in regards to kind of knowing where he was on the field, dropping the football, not being on the same page. I mean, I think you and I were standing right there when he had that drop where Goff visibly is like, what's going on? And he kind of starts to visibly get mad, which triggered the coaches to kind of talk to him. So, yes, I understand where Antoine Randall is like, hey, if he spits wrong, people are going to cover it. But this is one of the top players that you drafted, and of course he's going to get the coverage because he is an integral part of your plans. And I know that the level of patience that the coaching staff may have is not going to be the same or align with the fans, but I do believe he could have did more in regards to showing a little bit more understanding of the routes, a little bit more reliability. Of course, you're going to put the ball on the ground, but it was inconsistent day after day after day. And I think that's where some of the angst started to creep up here with people. And remember, you can't hate you can't shoot the messenger. You can't shoot Matt. You can't shoot me for saying that we saw Jameson drop the ball. That's what happened.
We write what we see, right?
Absolutely. You write what you see. And it's I do understand the putting him under the microscope, but I think he should be. And that's the role that you take when you're a first round pick and you get that high priced dollar. You're one of the stars of the team and you're going to get a lot of the coverage and a lot of the attention. And guys, Matt knows it and I know it. You guys are reading it. So you may say you hate to hear about negativity, but you guys are reading it at a high level, and that's why we're talking about it. Jameson needed to do more. Am I wrong? Am I a little bit too critical? How did you see the plight of Jameson Williams?
I don't think so. And I think you talked about viewing him under the microscope and how we may have a deeper look or we may be a little more critical about his inconsistency. Well, that's fair. At least I believe it's fair for us to do that, because when the Lions made that investment in him, his career with Detroit just got shorter. His guaranteed career just got short. He went from, we get five guaranteed years with him, it's now down to 3.5. So we have less of less video, less film we're going to be able to see of him in his career. So I think, I know that might not have been the most direct answer, but I believe that, you know, when you're off for such an extended amount of time, we don't know really what to expect physically, but we as fans, as writers, as watchers of these games, expect the players not on the field to be taking care of business in all other facets of the game. So we expect you to come to training camp and not have any questions about the playbook, not have those concerns. We're okay with a drop here and there. That happens to everyone. We saw Marvin Jones drop a ball a week or two ago, but he got right back up the very next play and caught a touchdown pass. What we want to see out of JMO is consistency. We want to see that rhythm with Goff. We want to see how he's going to fit in that offense. And although we saw flashes of his brilliance athletically, the inconsistencies are concerning.
Exactly. And that's the point, is that, and look, I think here's where people maybe get biased in their own way. Nobody's making conclusive statements. Nobody in the media said Jameson's a bust, trade him. You didn't see that. You are seeing some speculation regarding how the team should handle him, which causes some ire and things like that based on comparisons and bold ideas that people have. But it goes to show you that in the NFL, that and the coaching staff knows it. I think that they like to see a little bit of heat put on J-Mo to see kind of how he handles it. So I think that one of the big storylines going into training camp will be, how does J-Mo show up? And the first couple of days, what does he do?
Yeah. And while we have been critical, I actually am, I don't want to say, I'm definitely bullish on Jameson Williams. What I really was watching him, watching for him to see what happened after those plays, after he dropped a ball, after the inconsistencies. I don't know if I necessarily saw it at the beginning of OTAs, but in the last 2 weeks, anytime those things happen, I saw him pursuing Jared Goff, him pursuing Amon-Ra and Marvin Jones, to ask questions about his missed route or whatever took place on that play. So I took that as a good sign. I took that as him gaining maturity, and I really like to see that. And then, you know, when he does catch the ball and has a little bit of space, that dude is gone.
Yes, and it'll take time. I do think that I know we are an instant gratification society, and once your first catch is a touchdown, that kind of elevates the excitement level because people can see what he can do. But he's got to put in the work, and and in Ben Johnson's offense, it's not that easy. You saw, and I thought if you guys really pay attention, Antoine Randle-L made an interesting comment that you haven't heard too often publicly, where he said, look, we're trying to have Jameson Williams kind of shift a little bit in regards to when he makes a catch, moving the ball around to what hand and things like that, which can sometimes just put a little bit of added information into a player's mind where he's realizing, okay, I got to catch the ball. I see my defender to the right. I got to put the ball in my left hand. And it's kind of viewed as, look, make the mistakes in OTAs. This is the time to make it.
Yes.
But training camp, we got to see it because it's very vital, being that he's going to be suspended for the first six games. So he's got to have a good training camp. And I think he will. I think that nobody likes to see their name being dragged in the mud a little bit early on, or having reporters ask your position coach, hey, what's going on with his hands? We're seeing a little bit of inconsistencies. So I think that it's going to be vital that he steps up and handles business. And then Jared Goff, I thought he had an okay mini camp and an okay OTAs, potentially could have had a little bit more in regards to execution in the team drills. Not a lot of touchdowns, a lot of times where it started off a little bit slow. We talked about the impact of the defense, but I think that early on that it's not that big of a deal in regards to what we saw from Goff in the teamwork that we did see, because we do start to see that he does have chemistry with Amon-Ra, with Laporta, with Marvin Jones. There's going to be a great amount of work. And you got to remember, we didn't even see David Montgomery, who's going to be.
Oh, I know.
Yes, we didn't get to see him, which is unfortunate. But this is a player that the Lions are going to count on to get some yards in the run game. So I think that, obviously when we look at it day by day, there's going to be some days where Jared Goff struggles, and Kirby Joseph got his number all throughout camp. And that was one of my biggest takeaways of camp, was I think Kirby Joseph is on his way to potential superstardom, all pro type numbers, especially with this, with the swagger that he's got, and now getting that confidence, knowing that he picked off Aaron Rodgers in a big game. I think that Kirby Joseph found his avenue to pick off Jared Goff, but I think that's going to challenge Goff to come back with that offense at training camp. And when no pad, Matt, you'll see it when the pads come on, it's a different vibe. It's like a whole different, it's a whole different breath of air that comes out when the pads come out. So that was my biggest takeaway, similar to you, was that the defense is here to make a statement, and Kirby Joseph is emerging. What was your biggest takeaway from OTAs? What was one of the biggest one or two lessons you learned outside of the defense?
You know, I love that you brought that up about Kirby Joseph. We were talking at the beginning about the swagger with all these new players coming in. And although swagger doesn't produce a statistic, I think the type of swagger that a guy like CJ Gardner-Johnson comes in, what that can do to Kirby's career, letting him be himself, like that was my favorite part about the team last year. It's seeing the guys like Jamal Williams, you know, verbally share, you know, they feel so comfortable being themselves. Kelvin Shepard talked about it too. So I'm glad you came back to that. I think that will really allow guys like Kirby Joseph and Tracy Walker to thrive. But, you know, I'm going to go offensive. I probably would have said secondary, and we already talked defense. We already talked linebackers. I'm going to go with two rookies on the offensive end. I'm going to split my answer between Sam LaPorta and Jahmyr Gibbs. And it's funny that was our trade, right? Right. That was the trade package. We got 12 and 34 for number six. So they both just really impressed me. You know, Jahmyr Gibbs, the things they were trying to do with him on the offense, I they were throwing a lot at him, and they talked about it yesterday in the media interviews. They were throwing a lot at him, and you could see him glued to the hip with Goff, just like trying to see where he fits in this offense or where he can excel all over the offense, out of the backfield, at X or Y, at the slot receiver position. He can do it all, and his speed is impressive. But, man, Sam LaPorta, I didn't expect him to look like he did so soon.
Yeah.
And he's still raw. I don't know if he's going to be a starter day one. I don't really even care. That the tight end room is pretty deep, and however they use the guys, we'll see. But his athleticism, his versatility playing the tight end position, allowing them to do so many different things with him on the field, I think it's going to be one of those draft picks we look back in a couple of years and say that might actually be the best pick of that draft.
Having a nice conversation talking ball with Matt Broder, Lions beat writer for Woodward Sports. Make sure you give him a follow at MattBro21. Also was a former pitcher for some team out there in Ann Arbor. Looks like he's got some athletic skills here. But
go blue.
Yeah, being that.
Although I know where I know what you're teasing, I think.
Yeah.
I think I know where you're going with this.
Being that you had some athletic prowess, I would have early on, which speaks to my lack of abilities gambling, I would have said, okay, tall, lanky, has some athletic abilities. I think that Matt would have been the favorite in the media combine. And then everybody comes back and everybody's all happy talking about it. And there's no talk of Matt. And I'm like, oh God, he must have did horrible. So let's set the scene here. The last couple years, it's been fun. It's an opportunity for the media to go out there and do some athletic competition, compete against each other. And the last year, the naming rights to the recording room in the media room was up for grabs. Now, me personally, I have not ever taken part. I'm more of a serious, like, handle my business and go home kind of guy. And I did have a personal matter to attend to. So I'm not really all that about being photographed and have my athletic ability critiqued. Being that I'm a hardworking lad covering a football team, I'm not in anywhere near, I can admit, in any kind of shape to perform athletic duties consistently. And I got stuff to do. So I plan, it's no secret, I plan my days, boom, 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 get to work and go home and handle business. And Matt, you know, took the advice of others and said, okay, I'll along with my videographer, I'll throw my hat in the ring. But it didn't go well from what I'm hearing. So tell us what you did, how'd you do in the competitions, and what the hell happened?
I struggled, man. I flopped a big fat L. Although if there were more throw-in drills in this combine that we went through, I think I would have done a little bit better. But no, you know, they had some football throwing accuracy. That was the one throwing drill, and I did okay in that. But then we had to kick a field goal, and I think I kicked the ground in both of my field goal attempts. I think I kicked the ground before the ball both times. Ball didn't really go anywhere. We had a punt catch. We had to catch punts. I did okay there, caught both punts. But what was the other one? Then we also had to punt the ball furthest distance, longest distance punt. I believe Jeremy Reisman was the one who won that, kicking it about 58 yards after the bounce. I definitely had the highest punt, the most hang time, but it certainly didn't go 58 yards. So, man, I struggle out there. I know what I need to improve on for next year. I know what I need to be training on this offseason, but it was not one of my finest moments.
Yeah, see, it's humbling too. I think it's a good opportunity for the media to always remember that these athletic feats are not easy to do. It's not easy to,
yes.
When you're up close, it's not easy to secure a catch when Jared Goff is throwing a fastball and there's a defender ready to pop you and stick his hand in your face and then talk trash to you. So it's not that easy to accomplish these things. But hey, this is what they're paid to do. They're paid to read criticisms about their game. That's just the way it is, and they got to handle it. And I always tell people that look at the media critically, and I say this: You think the words that are printed on paper or said in a show is rough? Just try to line up incorrectly and see how a coach or a coordinator yells at you. It permeates throughout the whole freaking facility. Line up properly, goddammit, MF-er! You know what I mean? It's like these guys are not afraid, or they're not...
We saw Ben Johnson yesterday. You and I were standing right next to each other.
Exactly. These guys are coached hard. You think, yes, Dan Campbell publicly is a nice guy, but the man worked with Bill Parcells. When there's issues at hand, he is the first to light somebody up. This is football, and they want that. But at the same time, Campbell brings the authenticity to be somebody that speaks his mind and is true all throughout the day. But when it comes to football, X's and O's, if you line up incorrectly or you don't run the play the way he wants it, the whistle's going to get blown and you're going to get cursed out. So don't be so sensitive to criticism about your team. It's only for the better, and it's only for the opportunity to get these guys to perform at a high level. And that's what standards looks like. I know Detroit Lions fans are not used to standards, but I always critique on a Super Bowl standard. Like, what is this looking like in regards to how a team should perform when they meet up against good teams in the playoffs? And that's the way in which real NFL reporters cover teams, is to say, hey, yeah, there's some good things to talk about, but if there's some mistakes that are glaring, you got to talk about it. You got to say, hey, if the Lions don't have a deep threat option, or Jameson Williams is not available, that's going to be a problem when it comes down to a playoff game against the 49ers or the Eagles, where you got to kind of have a shootout mentality. So it's something that it's okay. You guys got to be a little bit more tolerant of criticism and constructive criticism. Matt, I enjoyed the time. I think that we'll have more conversations down the road regarding the Lions. I thought OTAs was a success. I think, like you, many of us are looking forward to a little bit of downtime, not having the daily grind and the 24-hour news cycle of the NFL for the next month at least. But we'll catch up again. I really appreciate it. Where can people find you outside of Twitter?
Yep. Thank you, John, again. It truly was a pleasure joining the show, and hope we can speak again. You know, Twitter's the best spot to find me, or you can find me on Instagram with the same handle, Matt Bro, MattBro21. And then all my articles are posted on WoodwardSports.com. So check us out. Occasionally we even have John join the show with the big boys on the live shows throughout the day. So again, John, thank you so much for everything. I appreciate all your knowledge throughout camp and for having me on today.